We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Two-thirds, no hit ball, with a 22-year-old rookie, not a soul in this place that doesn't know what's at stake. Ground ball, Velasquez throws across, he got it! Reed Devers throws a no-hitter!
Yeah, we got a problem. This is a problem.
I always tell people this.
Let me teach you something about golf here. So Mike Lesakowski, Amy Lesakowski, they're just in here, you know, doing some stuff, getting ready for the 11-day power play. And Mike asked me to golf, and I'm like, all right, cool. Like, I'm going to try and get out and golf. There's a problem, though. I had a chance to golf with Mike and Sean McCrone and Jen Hickok and Don Granato at the Sabres alumni golf tournament.
Oh, look at you name dropping.
I golfed with Don Granato. I played great that day. Great.
Mm-hmm.
I smashed the ball off the tee like never before. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is, like, they might think I'm good.
You are good.
Okay, you came with me during the 100 holes of golf.
I've never heard of you with a bad round.
100 holes of golf. You came for like holes 63 through 80 before we got rained out once.
The monsoon.
And you also saw me really in a groove, playing great. Howard showed up. I bombed the drive and then put a pitching wedge to like 4 feet. And I turned right to him. I'm like, I'm not this good. You know, 63 holes
that's
in,
good.
You're kind of blacking out at that point.
Well, that's key, too. You got to set the expectation. Like,
yeah,
after the shot, you're like, okay, that was
abnormal. Here's a great example. So we're doing the 100 holes of golf again. It's coming up June 23rd. It's actually the same day the 11-day power play starts.
Yeah.
So we're doing the 100 holes of golf. I'll be looking to raise money for that. Actually, I'm hoping to tie in the power play, too. But anyway. So the crew for the 100 holes of golf, we play at Wanaka. It benefits Courage of Carly Fund and the Luca Live Like Luca, the Luca Kalani Foundation. There's a text group with all these guys, and they're all texting. And yesterday, the question was like, hey, does anybody have the final birdie count last year? Because people will pledge dollars.
Per birdie,
if you
right?
get a birdie, it's $100. If you get an eagle, someone will donate $1,000. And like, yeah, hang on a second. And they posted the entire group and how many birdies we got individually. And there's the top of the thing, you know, playing 100 holes. There's the top. Top guys got like 24, 21, 18, 16, 16, 14. And then down way at the bottom is my name and the number 3.
Okay, so
three.
Hold on a second.
3! I played 100 holes, Howard. 3. And, let the record show, 2 of them were in the 90th. Holes. I birdied the third hole and then the 92nd and 93rd or something like that. I broke an 89 hole birdie-less drought.
That's worse than the Bills and Sabres.
It's pretty bad.
That's really
I mean, it shows longevity. But he was able to hold on the whole round.
It shows you overcome adversity.
Oh,
clearly,
man.
You were letting other guys build some confidence.
Yeah,
you didn't want to. You didn't want to embarrass the rest of the field, the rest of the group, the rest of the golfers. Let me look like I'm just an ordinary schmo hacking away. Look. Over the years at the GR Golf Tournament, I've heard good things about your group. You seem to play well in the tournament.
That's in a scramble. In a scramble, you don't even have to be that good to be like, oh, yeah, he's fine.
I've seen you hit tee shots like 300 yards.
No.
You bomb tee shots.
No. Nate knows what I'm talking about. Like, Nate Geary, another big
golfer. You played TPC, did you not?
I played Sawgrass. I played
Pebble
Beach.
You didn't shoot 200. You played Pebble Beach.
Right.
You're good.
No.
Haven't you broken... I know you broke 90. Obviously, you break 90. Haven't you broken 80?
Only at not a real course. I mean, not a real course, but no.
Was it an 18-hole course?
Not at a course that counts to break 80.
How come it doesn't count?
Because it just doesn't count. It's Delaware.
Was there a windmill
Park.
It? Like a miniature
it's Delaware Park. The par is 68. There's no trouble. It's a wonderful course.
No trees, no water, no sand.
Not really. It's a lovely course that I love to play in the city. I take great pride in playing there and being in the city playing golf, but no, scores there are not the same. You know, there's fancy formulas like slope and all that for how difficult the course is, and you can tell how good your round actually was. I mean, I've shot sub 80 at Delaware several times. I never really think that much about
it. Okay, so let me ask you this. First off, I will also say full disclosure here. When I say you're a good golfer, I'm comparing you to me.
Right.
So,
you know who's a good golfer? Brian Koziel's a good golfer.
Now, actually, this is what I wanted to ask you. You.
Don't ask me if Nate's a good golfer.
Brian, Nate, Sal Golfs, Shope, of the GR golfers.
Yeah.
Brian, who's the best? Where do you rank? Because you do behind, well at the GR tournaments. I feel like when you do Bills and Sabres golf tournaments, you do well.
Behind Brian. Nate's better than me, but I do beat him sometimes. Nate's a little bit, he's listening.
Who dresses better?
Oh, come on.
Okay.
Come on, please.
Who has better food takes?
Mike was always a better golfer than me.
Really?
When we'd play. I haven't played with Mike in a long time, Mike Shope. He was always better than me.
Sal?
Sal and I are about the same, I would say, neighborhood. Right. I mean, I don't know who would have the edge there when we've played plenty of times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't hear you. I don't know. It doesn't seem like that often you come in and talk about how you just stink. Like, my game is terrible. I can't find my swing.
Well,
I hate this sport. I'm never going back.
This is where, yeah, last year.
Which I feel golfers do, by the way.
Right. So. Now with newborns and kids at home, it's tougher to get out. It was the curse of last year. Last year was probably my best year ever playing the game. I was the best I've ever played for a full year.
See, you're just making
the
case for me.
It was a curse because it was harder to get out, and now this year it's even harder to get out.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, like, when you get a little rusty, all of a sudden, I'm going to play with Mike Lezakowski, and he's going to be like, man, I thought you were better than this.
You know? So he should take you for some
money. When we have Don Granato on, he's like, oh, I remember how you play golf. I'm going to be like, Don, it doesn't go like that all the time. You shouldn't expect
no,
that.
No, let him
you
believe
know,
it.
You know who I am to Don Granato? I am who Sabres fans thought Steve Bernier was. Look at this guy. Look at this guy can play.
So you had the two-goal game on your debut. And
yep. First day, this is going great. And then after that, like, oh, totally forgettable.
Oh, come on. You're selling yourself short. I think that's part of what golfers do. Because the game is so unpredictable from round to round.
It's definitely, and
don't you think also the minute you start feeling a little bit too cocky in golf, it'll knock you down three pegs?
100%. Everybody that plays golf, it's definitely in the culture of golf, no matter how good you are, unless maybe you're on the pro tour. You hit a bomb drive down the middle, and you're feeling great about it. You have to turn to your playing partner and be like, good to get one out there, eh? You know, like, finally, you know.
It's all about
better to be lucky.
Self-deprecating humor in golf is
great shot. It was a good miss. I mean, I didn't really hit it that well.
But you know what? That's among the many reasons why I never took the sport up. Like, you can get better at just about every sport and still maintain, like at baseball. Like if you're able to hit a fastball, hit a curveball, whatever, you can play. I'm not talking pro level, but just be able to manage the sport and not embarrass yourself. Odds are you're not going to be great, awful, great, awful, great. You'll stay kind of steady at that sport, whatever it is, basketball, hockey, tennis, pool, I don't know. To me, that's why golf is why I will never take up the sport even in retirement, because it's infuriating because there is no predicting. There is no, you know, great round and then you just stay at a certain level. It's so up and down and it's so unpredictable. And it doesn't mean you became a bad golfer all of a sudden. It's just really frustrating. More than you can maintain any sport, I bet, more than golf.
No,
I
maybe.
Just think it's just it very is, it, up and down.
It's a little bit of that. It's also one of the rare
Unless
sports.
You're a pro, I mean, obviously.
It's also one of the rare sports you can get better as you age. That's the other thing. Like, it is unpredictable, but I mean, I used to play a good deal of basketball. Do you know what it would look like if I tried to play basketball today?
Right,
it would not look like it did when I was 25.
You could play golf till you die, basically. Right.
For golf, you can be the best you've ever been at 55.
Not happening for someone that I know. But you could play. Sure, you could play till your 60s, 70s, whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas your beer league softball games are probably, your career's probably ending, you know, before you hit your 50s and 60s, maybe. Hey, I forgot to mention, PGA Championship is next week. They're doing essentially the golf version of a Manning cast for the PGA Championship. And it's going to be all 4 days. I should probably get you the times and everything. It's going to be all 4 days. It's an alternate telecast. This is being done with Peyton Manning's production company, actually. Joe Buck is going to host it, and it's with ESPN, and their golf analyst, Michael Collins, who's pretty entertaining, actually. I like his work. So Joe Buck and Michael Collins are going to have this alternate telecast all 4 days of the PGA Championship among their celebrity guests. One, Josh Allen, is going to
be.
Nice. Josh is at the F1. Josh is all over the place now. So Troy Aikman, Josh Allen, Charles Barkley, Fred Couples, the Manning brothers are among the guests they're going to do for this alternate telecast all 4 days of the PGA Championship, the golf version of the Manning cast. I don't have a time and a day for Josh, but he's going to be on there at some point.
Very cool. I found a Bills thing right here I want to run by you from Ben Baldwin. And we'll make it into a little bit of a game. So Ben Baldwin's tweeting about J.C. Treader, who is still available, like a free agent.
Yeah, right. The Browns released him.
Yeah, and he has really good pass protection grades. There's a lot to like about J.C. Treader, who's not signed. And so ESPN, I think that's who this would be, ESPN has, here we go, to get a sense of where teams might still have holes, if we took the current five projected starters at face value, the 20 lowest graded pass protectors, okay? So, what Ben Baldwin and ESPN have done here, they have every single starting offensive lineman in the league ranked the 20 bottom guys. These are teams that still have holes. Your question, your challenge, should you choose to accept it, which Bills player is in this list? Bottom 20 ranked projected starter on the offensive line. And I'll just go ahead and tell you, bottom 20 means out of 160 offensive linemen, this offensive lineman is graded 154th in pass protection. Which Bills player is it?
Okay, first off, we're assuming Bates is at left guard or is one of the starting guards.
Yes.
So Saffold, Bates, okay.
I mean, I think the projected starters for the Bills, yes. Dawkins, Saffold, Morse, Bates, Brown.
So I'm going to say Spencer Brown.
Spencer Brown is ranked 154th.
I didn't think he'd be that low, quite honestly, but it just seemed too obvious because the other guys, Saffold's game wouldn't have dropped off that much in Tennessee.
You'll see a little bit of Saffold not being what he was.
But not one but like that,
not,
like 20
not
lowest.
Not that bad. He graded pretty poorly last year. Hmm. Here's the thing I want to know about this grading of Spencer Brown. I don't dispute that like he's probably got a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. Did he lose a lot of points when they put him at left tackle? Because
in the game that he
had to fill in at left tackle,
yeah, he was chasing
Carolina, he was in real rough shape.
Yeah.
And then he had to survive.
But he also had, he missed a little time with COVID.
He did.
And he was a little rusty when he came back, you know, because I thought he came on, he played well, they made that change, game four, game five? He goes into the starting lineup, looks really good. And I thought he was rusty when he first came back, for sure. Well, I assume the left tackle game does count, by the way, if it's your overall grade as an offensive lineman. But I thought he was still a little – he had to get his game back a little bit when he came back after missing some time. So it was a little bit of a mixed – I didn't think he'd be that low, but I know it was kind of a mixed season for Spencer Brown. I think my feelings on Brown is more about upside for him than saying, boy, he was lights out in year one. It's more about I think he was better than Darrell Williams on the edge. And more about what Brown's ceiling is at this point in his career, as opposed to basing it on what you saw last season from him. That was tough. It was a tough ask, you know, switching sides, had some rocky moments in the preseason on the left side. I thought he got comfortable on the right side, and I thought there were a lot of positive things to like about his performance over the course of the season. But it was the best candidate of the five to say who they might have with such a low grade. Because we knew it wasn't Dawkins. I didn't think it would be Bates. And, you know, Morse had a really good year. So by process of elimination, it got me to Spencer Brown. You worried about Spencer Brown at right tackle?
No, I'm not worried. But I guess it's probably a good indication, the grade there, that's 154th out of 160, that, you know, we didn't have high expectations. He stepped in for Darrell Williams, and he played right tackle, and he was big, and he was okay.
Seemed to be able to handle the edge guys better than Williams, because Williams' game had dropped a little bit. Yeah. He was better being hidden inside a car.
Well, one thing about, you know, the Bills' passing game and Josh Allen getting pressure and escaping pressure Allen, the way the Bills have lived on offense is to not be afraid of Allen being pressured. He's pressured more than any quarterback in the league, in part because he's hanging in and throwing downfield, and he's also the best in the league at escaping it. So I think if there's one grade, one position for this team to be graded, and you think, like, wow, that grade seems a lot lower than I think it would be, or than I thought it would be, you would expect it to be offensive line because he doesn't get sacked a lot. That doesn't necessarily mean the line is great. It just means he's not getting sacked a lot, and there are a lot of factors that go into that.
Yeah, and I would guess the run blocking grades were not that great for the Bills' offensive line. I would assume they got a little better as the season went on. I mean, Singletary became more of a presence at the end of the season, and it appeared they were doing a better job of opening from some holes for him. Did you ever come across, by the way, like, do they grade? They grade individual players. Is there a way that they grade out by team your offensive line? Like, the Bills had the blank rated offensive line last year, according to Pro Football Focus. I know it's hard to say that because it's not the same five guys playing every game, obviously. There's different players that come in and out of the lineup, but I'd be curious because I'm going to guess the Bills were not one of the top offensive lines in the league last year.
If you want pass block win rate as a team, the Bills were eighth.
Okay, that's good. That's actually better than I thought. I thought they would have been maybe middle
of
the pack.
If you want run block win rate as a team,
yeah,
the Bills were 23rd.
All right, I kind of thought that wouldn't surprise me on the run block win rate. I feel like that got better as the year went on, but that doesn't surprise me. It's that low. But pass rush win rate, are you factoring in the escapability of the quarterback as well, or is that just pretty much how long you hold your block?
2.5 seconds.
Okay. That's good. Top 10 is good.
It's locked in 2.5 seconds. Right. If you win your block in 2.5 seconds or lose, that's a pass rush win or pass rush loss.
That's good. I think, you know, considering some of the changes and the turnover on the offensive line, and they went through however many different starting five combinations because of different reasons, injuries, COVID, what have you, ineffective play, you know, before they finally locked on to their best combination. Top 10 pass rush win rate, I think, is good. Very good for that line with all the changes they went through last year. Chris Sims is going to start his top 40 quarterback rankings. He does this every year. I think he's about to start it. Maybe this week. I forget. I just saw an email about it recently. Look out for Josh Allen to be number one this year. He was two last year.
Will he be ranked the number one NFL player by players?
NFL
100?
Are we approaching the NFL Network top 100?
It's August.
All right.
Yeah. He was 10th last year.
Okay, if he isn't number one. Mahomes was number one, by the way, in the Sims rankings last year. I think Josh Allen would be ahead of Patrick Mahomes in this year's rankings. I'm trying to think who else would he. Rodgers, Watson, Wilson, Jackson, Murray, Stafford, Prescott. Yeah, Josh Allen's going to be number one in Chris Sims' rankings, right? Unless he has Rodgers ahead of Allen, and Allen stays two. Is he number one? I'm going to go no, but I'm trying to think who my answer would be. Because NFL Network is everybody, not just quarterbacks.
Yep.
I'm going to say no. He doesn't go from 10 to 1. But who would be 1?
Brady.
Oh, God, no. Has Aaron Donald been 1 before?
I don't know.
He's got to be up there, right? He's got to be up in the top 10 somewhere. You pulling up last year's top 10?
I'm trying to search the number 1s.
I don't think he makes that big a jump. I wonder where Joe Burrow ends up.
That's a good question. 14.
If they beat, you know, I wonder if they beat Kansas City. I don't know, they go on and win the Super Bowl, make the Super Bowl, maybe. I just think 10 to 1 is a huge jump to make in player voting from one season to the next.
Okay, here we go. I've got it. And I was looking for a Wikipedia where I could go previous season.
Yeah.
So, the NFL top. No, I'm sorry, that's an all-time team. I'm looking for top 100. Okay, here we go. Yeah, they started in 2011. So going back, last year it's Patrick Mahomes, 2020 it's Lamar Jackson, 2019 Aaron Donald, 2018 Tom Brady, 2017 Tom Brady, 2016 Cam Newton, 2015 J.J. Watt, 2014 Peyton Manning, 2013 Adrian Peterson, 2012 I believe it's Aaron Rodgers, and 2011, Tom Brady.
I don't think it'll be Mahomes.
It's interesting that there haven't been more reigns, right, where Brady's number one for 4 years or Manning for 4 years.
Right.
That from the look of that, I'll just go through it once more, nobody won back-to-back, right? I mean, here's,
didn't you have Brady won it twice?
He won it twice, but not back-to-back.
Brady won it back-to-back in 17 and 18.
Yeah, I thought you said he was won back-to-back.
Okay.
Yeah. So here's
Yes, you're right.
Here you go. Here's your top 10 from last year. You tell me who's won, assuming nobody jumps up from outside the top 10. Here's your top 10. Mahomes, Donald, Rodgers, Henry.
No way.
Kelsey.
No.
Davante Adams.
No.
Brady, DeAndre Hopkins, T.J. Watt. Josh Allen.
T.J. Watt, he's got a shot at
from
it.
From 9 to 1, was the only... That's the guy I thought of making a leap.
You know who's going to drop far is DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah.
Not that he's not good.
No, but he'll drop
to like 18.
Yeah.
He'll drop out of the top 10.
Brady's not going to win it. He won't be number one. I don't think he's going to be number one.
John Scott texts me, NFL 100 is done throughout the regular season. Playoff performances do not factor in.
Okay, then that hurts Joe Burrow's stock.
It also hurts... Josh is not going to be number one.
Yeah, because the playoffs were...
The playoffs were out of this world. And the regular season until December, you know, the Bills were kind of, I bet he's still top 10, but.
Mahomes probably isn't one then either.
No,
his whole beginning of this season was not great.
So, you know what? Henry missed time in the regular season. So it's got to be like either Donald or Rodgers.
Or Brady. Brady had a great year.
No.
Where does Jonathan Taylor wind up?
That's a good question, too. He could be top 10. You know, it's funny learning that it is done throughout the season and not the playoffs. The question will be asked, how could Josh Allen be number 10? The answer will be, they didn't factor in the playoffs. That'll be the answer.
Yeah. The playoffs, those two games were the Patriots. Yeah.
Remember that Patriots game?
Vaguely. They won that game, right? The Bills won that game, I think. It's a close game, wasn't it?
It's a good memory.
Wasn't it like a late field goal by Bass that won that game? Boy, I was on the edge of my seat that day. 803-0550 to join us. 888-552-550. Phone line's always open for you to join us here. By the way, we've been talking a little bit about the schedule today. We're awaiting the release of the full schedule tomorrow. The coverage of schedule release week on WGR being brought to you by BookSeats.com. Custom flight, hotel, and ticket packages to events around the world.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Tannehill takes. Gives it to the big man. Charging up the middle. He's got good run. Got good room across the 40. Across midfield. He's going to score. There he goes. Derrick Henry is going to hit the end zone. Touchdown, Tennessee. They tie it up. It took one play. It went 76 yards. Derrick Henry showing great speed once he burst through the first line of Buffalo defenders.
Titans will be here this year, week two. We know that. That was announced this week as the little leaks of this, or the little releases, I should say, of the schedule come out. Full schedule coming out tomorrow night, Monday Night Football week two. And we're going to talk about the week two opponent for the Bills with Teron Davenport. He covers the Titans for ESPN.com. He's joining us on the Western Hotline. Teron, good morning. It is Howard and Jerry. Thanks for coming on with us this morning, by the way. How are you, sir?
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
We're good. Hey, we'll go with the easy one first, okay? Are the Titans, in your opinion, still the favorite in the division going into next season?
I mean, I think they're right there along the lines. The gap has been closed between them and the Colts, but I would say they're one of the favorites, yeah.
What was the feeling in Nashville when the news came out that the Colts had, you know, basically swapped out Carson Wentz for Matt Ryan?
There weren't really. One of the local hosts, he's kind of like a shock jock. You know, he made it out to be Johnny Unitas going, you know, from Baltimore to Indianapolis. But for the most part, people here are just, okay, you know, they'll see how it goes. There weren't really any, like, body running to the bridge to jump off because they felt the season was over or anything like that.
Right. What, you know, in terms of Tennessee, Teron, as you looked at the offseason, where were the biggest holes to fill, and how many of those did they check off on the checklist, in your opinion?
Well, I think biggest holes were on the offensive line. I think they needed to add receiver depth as well. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they drafted Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, so that's one of the spots that they'll use to fill the tackle, you know, the right tackle void. They have a void at left guard, as you obviously know, Roger Saffold, mm-hmm. who's gone to Buffalo. And I don't know that they filled that. They added Jamarco Jones from the Seattle Seahawks. And they have Dylan Raidens, who worked there at left guard during camp when Saffold was out. So we'll see what happens there. As for the receiver position, you know, we talked about A.J. Brown not being there anymore. So I'm not sure that they upgraded that, even though Treylon Burks is a pretty solid receiver and Kyle Phillips is a good one also. So we'll see how it goes.
Do you think with Brown leaving and Jones leaving and Woods coming in and Burks, do you think the type of passing game is changing at all? Does anything go differently because of the weapons that have gone out and the ones that have come in to replace them?
No, they're going to remain the same type of team. I mean, they've always been a running offense, and they continue to do that even when Derrick Henry was injured. So I highly doubt losing A.J. Brown is going to change what they want to do. And I think when you look at Burks, he has a similar skill set to Brown, so they'll continue to work that offense the way they have. Now, they did get a new pass game coordinator in Tim Kelly, who was the OC with the Texans last year, so we'll see how that comes along. They do need to, like, add some more spice, like creativity, to the passing game, and hopefully for their sake, Kelly could come in and help him with that.
What do you think of the Austin Hooper pickup? How much do you think he might be able to help out in the overall passing game?
Yeah, I think he's going to help out because he's a more reliable pass catcher from the tight end position, and he's someone that should be able to be consistent for them. I mean, you look at some of his best years at Atlanta. As a matter of fact, back-to-back 70-plus reception seasons. One of those was in an offense is very similar to what the Titans do. So I think it's a good pickup for them. It becomes even more paramount now with A.J. Brown not being there because Brown took 23% of the team's receiving yards with him to Philly, and a 27% target share is now up for grabs. So Hooper has a good shot to turn that one-year deal into a long-term contract.
Do you think that they would like or have a guy who could be get the most targets, or is that going to be kind of a spread around targets by committee type thing?
I think they're going to spread it around targets by committee. And you have to remember Robert Woods is put into the mix too, and once he gets back from injury, he's someone that is very capable of handling 100-plus targets. So I think they'll spread it around, but Woods will probably be the primary guy for Ryan Tannehill, and he just has a way of just gaining the quarterback's trust. Everybody that he's worked with since he's left Buffalo, you know, he's been one of the favorite targets at some point.
Yeah, we're big fans of his up here. I think that was a nice pickup for Tennessee. With Tannehill, Teron, when you look at Tannehill, and I don't mean to suggest like there's a battle with Malik Willis, but what is Ryan Tannehill's standing inside the organization?
It's solidified. They have him as the starter, and he's someone that they're behind, and they believe that he is their guy, and that's what they're going to stick to. Now, selecting Willis isn't really an indictment on Tannehill as much as it's just status quo. Mm-hmm. At every position, that's what the Titans do. They try to draft for the future, and this was the year where they were able to do that without having to invest a first-round pick in the position. You know, you still got one of the top guys, in my opinion, the top guy in the draft class.
Last thing for you on the defense, you know, I'm looking at their depth chart, Teron, and there's some really, really good pieces in the front seven. What is your assessment at this point of the secondary going forward?
Yeah, I think the secondary got strengthened when they picked Roger McCreary. He's mm-hmm. a guy that I was a bit higher on than others. I love how sticky he is, how feisty he is, and he's someone that is always in phase. And you look at what he did against some really good receivers, you know, whether it's Devontae Smith, Jameson Williams, John Metchie, you know, all of those guys, he had solid performances against. So I think adding him to the mix is definitely good for them, especially when you have Christian Fulton, who I think is an up-and-comer, in his third year. Caleb Farley's returning from injury. Those two guys, I just mentioned Farley returning from injury, and Fulton has had his share of injuries. So to get someone like McCreary to come in and be just somewhat of that insurance policy is good. And Elijah Molden is a very solid nickel corner for them as well. So they have four pretty solid corners. Kevin Byard is an outstanding safety. And when you look at Amani Hooker, I think he's one of the more underrated defenders in the league. He's a really good safety as well. So they're in good shape there. Theo Jackson, who they drafted out of Tennessee, should come in and fill that Dane Cruikshank role as far as the guy that they match up against tight ends and, you know, someone that they have as kind of like their dime backer. So that secondary to me is solid.
All right. So the biggest question really when we get closer to the season and we get to see the Titans early in the season, sounds like the biggest question would be the offensive line above anything else.
Correct.
Okay. Hey, Teron, thanks for coming on the show with us. Appreciate you giving us some information this morning.
Yeah, no problem. You guys take it easy.
You too. Have a good day. Teron Davenport, part of the ESPN.com reporter, ESPN Nation, if you will, covers the Tennessee Titans for them, joining us on Western Hotline. Titans here in week two.
I know it's not as simple as running bad, passing good, but to hear they're just going to continue to lean to the run game.
You're not surprised to hear that.
No. And don't you end up thinking...
Good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
It was just...
No, and it's not like dissing Derrick Henry.
No.
You know, Zach played the big touchdown run highlight against the Bills in the game they won, but good. I mean, I would never really worry about that much. I'm glad they traded A.J. Brown.
You get bigger returns. So, just before the segment, Pat Thorman, who works at... He's at Establish the Run, football writer, he pointed something out, and... It took me back to last year's playoffs. So he pointed out the Seahawks, Falcons, and Texans averaged fewer plays per game than the Bengals. But the Bengals were near the bottom on plays per game. So one thing you think about with that is you want as many offensive plays as you can get.
Right.
Because that your only chance to get points outside of like defensive scores is offensive plays.
Yeah.
And teams that have more plays have more chances, whether it's extending drives or getting more possessions. Anyway, he pointed out that we might be too low on Cincinnati because the Bengals were fourth lowest in plays per game. And that might be right because if you look at Cincinnati, he responded to me with this. Their neutral pass rate changed over the year. Cincinnati neutral pass rate was 55% in the first month of the season, mm-hmm. 57% in the last month of the season. That's a very small uptick. You know what it was in the playoffs?
70?
69%.
That's a big jump.
In the playoffs, the Bengals threw it.
Well, Burrow hit a groove, and his receivers were unstoppable.
Both the Rams,
and Uzama too.
Both the Rams and the Bengals. I think I tweeted it during the Super Bowl or just before. The team that figures out stop running will win this game.
Mm-hmm.
And Cincinnati through the playoffs figured we should not run as much as we do. And the Rams got away with it too. Both those teams run too much. It's one of the things like about these Bills. We love them because they throw so much. And Ken Dorsey's got... something to put on paper for us. Like, let's see how many runs it going to be. You flat out become a better team if you have the horses to do it. You need the quarterback to do it. But just pass more. You'll be better.
But that's why I think Tennessee, it's funny. I come away from the interview with Teron. I mentioned earlier to you, I always underestimate the Titans. I'm not a fan of Vrabel, and I just never think the Titans are really... I mean, we spent, not just us, I think most football fans spent last season talking about how Tennessee would be the worst one seed in however long in the AFC. Having said that, I tell you, I come away impressed a little bit more with thinking about their defense. See, I was still not sold on their secondary, but with what he was talking about with bringing in McCreary, and I know Byard's good, but their if you look at their front seven on defense, there's some playmakers. There's three or four really talented players up there. If Dupree stays healthy, and Landry, and Simmons, and even Cunningham, they're good. They're actually, I feel... more worried about them defensively than I would tell you offensively. I think it was a great idea from my standpoint for them to trade A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm.
A.J. Brown is a really difficult guy to cover. And I like Robert Woods, but it's a different kind of receiver. Maybe the Burks kid brings that element to their passing game, assuming they throw it that much. But I feel better about their offense because if they're going to go and say, hey, Derrick Henry, you're getting 350 carries again, good. Because I can figure out a way to keep him in check. He never had a good game against the Bills until last year.
Really, he had done nothing in previous meetings against the Bills. But so I'm good with them because I think Woods is a good receiver, but he's not a game breaker like Brown. It remains to be seen what Burks does. I do like the Hooper addition at tight end. I think that's an upgrade for them. But what? They don't use their tight end. That's why we talked about Jonnu Smith.
Yep.
Like if Tennessee would just throw the ball a little bit more, they've got good weapons. Their defense, I got to start giving a little more credit on the defensive side of the ball. They're going to be good on that side this coming season. Still, I'm not changing my pick.
Not worried about Tennessee.
No, maybe they win that division, but I'm still, they're not going to be among the contenders in the conference. I don't think they're that at that level. Extendo Sports coming up in a moment. Top of the hour, it's going to be the Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio and Joe DiBiase. Stay tuned for that. Coming your way on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
I got a quick stat of the day, and I think we might be making fun of Jeremy in a second, too. Stat of the day brought to you by the law firm of Gelber and O'Connell. We take your personal injury case personally. Congratulations to the Pittsburgh Pirates. They finally got a win from a starting pitcher. It happened this week. They set a major league record, the longest stretch to begin a season without getting a victory from a starting pitcher. The first one came in game 28. The starters were 0-10. The relievers had all 11 of the wins. So congratulations. Hey, by the way, the Pirates also snapped a 16-game losing streak to the LA Dodgers. So, hey, there you go, Buccos.
Congratulations.
Good week for the Buccos. Raise the flag or whatever they do, whatever they say about that. Raise the Jolly Roger. I think that's the call when they win a game, right? Also, Patrick Marleau retired from the NHL officially. 23 years. Is he a Hall of Famer? 566 goals.
Yep.
1197 points.
Yep.
Okay. Two Olympic golds, a gold at the World Championships, a gold at the World Cup. Patrick Marleau officially retiring from the NHL. So, can we make fun of you?
Sure.
What did you want to say?
You were talking about how when Joe was filling in those couple times,
yes.
I was the old guy because Joe was about my age when I started with you, and I would be your age. When Joe was in.
I was 42 when you and I started working together, and you are now?
42.
Yeah. This is so funny.
Last week, there was some day I was explaining to Joe what arcades were.
Really?
Yeah, like there
a
used...
A town in Western New York.
No. There used to be that the only place you could play Mortal Kombat was at the mall.
Arcades. He didn't know what arcades...
I mean, I'm sure he probably knew, but the idea of games being so scarce and exclusive that... You know, you want to play NBA Jam, it's not at your house, it's at the mall. And you would go and spend
in the arcade.
Spend like $8 playing video games.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, the part he didn't know was you would bring your report card, and if you had a good report card, they would give you tokens.
Now, that's cool.
That's something we had.
I remember, the arcade. We had an arcade miniature golf place combo in Freeport, Long Island, about 20 minutes from the house. So you play miniature golf, and then you go inside. They had the carousel, you know, grab the brass ring. They had all the pinball machines, all the old, this, we're talking 1970s, kids. So no video games. But all the vintage arcade games that you play, and, you know, win tickets and go get a prize and all that. I'm trying to think what else they had. They had a little actual hand-pushed little train. Like, you would sit in it, and you'd have to... You didn't have pedals. It was like you'd have to crank it. Like it had handles. You'd have to, you know, turn the handles round and round and round. You kind of push yourself around a little bit of a train. That was a big day out. Miniature golf in the arcade. When mom said she would drop me and my friends off.
Mini golf is great.
That was a big afternoon out. And, of course, a hot dog and a drink while we were there.
Sure.
All right, old guy. We'll see you tomorrow. Joe is here and Sal is here. And they are going to bring. Oh, my God. We're early. Are we early by a minute?
I want to guess.
Are you golfing today? What are your plans?
No.
80 degrees today.
Can I tell you, what am I doing today? Probably more yard work.
Yard work, okay.
Painting some fence.
Uh-huh.
I bought a miter saw.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm kind of excited about that.
Well, you're handy enough around the house.
I wouldn't quite say that.
We're not going to get a text that a digit is missing or anything.
This
right?
might be like when the Bills acquired Sammy Watkins for EJ Manuel. Like, I'm feeling like this device, this weapon, will make me better. So I've decided to invest in a miter saw so I can, you know.
Joe, are you available when we get the text that he's in the emergency room with a minor setback?
I'll be fine.
Ready
don't hurt yourself.
I don't know when I'm going to use it first, but I got it. I'm excited about it.
I feel like that's dangerous.
I mean, you know.
Just be careful.
It's probably fine. It's a miter saw. Got big plans for.
Going to do a little heavy-duty work.
Woodworking and such.
There you go. Crafting. Nice.
Sure.
All right.
I've got plans to refurbish a picnic table.
Why don't you just do what I do? Buy a new picnic table.
Because I actually think I could do it. It's like an old picnic table. It's got the metal on the bottom, and there are five slats of wood that are really weathered and beaten up. And I'm pretty sure I can just very, very easily swap them out and have a kind of a brand new picnic table.
I'm going to guess that's doable.
Yeah.
Are you using the miter saw to cut down wood to fit the picnic table?
Well, the miter saw makes it so I don't have to wait in line at Shmoem Shmeepo for them to cut the wood from the long lengths. I can do it at home.
Good for you. I want video. So the boys.
Yeah, that's what I need to do is add more moving parts to this process.
Have Molly take it. The boys are up at next Point Show next, WGR.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.